prodded and analyzed. It wouldn't matter to the dead how long they lay on the floor in pools of their own blood, their lives ripped away by some psycho with unfettered firepower. Forever was forever, after all. If Decker had still been on the force, he would be in there right now. From where he was standing, he had already seen Mary Lancaster come and go twice. She looked haggard and repulsed and depressed. She glanced his way once, but it didn't seem to register. He knew she had other things on her mind. She probably had forgotten that a man named Sebastian Leopold was sitting in a holding cell, that he had confessed to murdering three people, two of whom had meant everything to Decker. Lancaster had a pile of fresh bodies to work on right now, and with a criminal out there walking free to possibly kill again, as opposed to one sitting placidly in a holding cell. The school story had, of course, hit the national pipeline. The town was the number one headline on every media platform. The names of the dead had still not been released. Decker had been checking on his phone. "Pending notification of next of kin" was the standard catchphrase. He had heard from a friend on the force that Pete Rourke's grandson was okay. But a son of a beat cop had not been so lucky. And a police dispatcher's husband, Andy Jackson, an English teacher at Mansfield, was in the hospital in critical condition with multiple gunshot wounds. Decker began to walk, choosing his path with care as he made his way in a long loop around the grounds of the high school and outside the investigative barriers. Miller had said the shooter had escaped.
The entire city of Burlington was up in arms about this development. Wasn't it enough that they had lost their loved ones? But to have the killer walking free right now, perhaps ready to murder again, it made the already horrible completely unbearable.
Yet how had the man escaped? It was personally and professionally offensive to Decker that any criminal should just walk away from an Armageddon of his own creation. And then there was the complex reason. Decker could do nothing more with Leopold. He could either sit powerless and run through endless and ultimately pointless speculation, or he could think about Mansfield and who had done it, and where that person was now. He chose the latter.
He kept walking toward the football field, where he'd enjoyed some of his greatest glories. Football season was over halfway done, and the grass was beaten down. The home game schedule for this Friday would not be played. They might not play another game this year. Maybe not another game here. Ever.
He went up into the stands and took a seat near the 50-yard line. It was a labor getting his obese body up the steps, and he told himself once again that he needed to lose the weight, get back in some semblance of shape. At this rate, at 42, he might not make it to 52. Hell, he might not make it to 43. As he stared down at the field, he ran back in his mind pretty much every play he had been involved in as a high school player. They must have been in his brain somewhere. But he had been incapable of digging through the gray matter to reach them. Now it was effortless. The DVR just went back to the date of his choosing, and the game film ran. It was both exciting and a bit disturbing to see himself as a young man running over and through other young men. He could throw the ball a mile and with accuracy. In college, he had quickly learned that his arm wasn't strong enough to make all the throws required of a college quarterback. He had switched to defense full-time and discovered that the guys on that side of the ball were bigger, stronger, and faster than he was. It was a rude awakening for a guy used to effortless success. He could have given up, but he had chosen to simply work harder than his more gifted teammates. In the end, it had been for naught. His playing days, long over, his law enforcement career also in the toilet. He sat on the hard aluminum bleacher with the row of ridges that guaranteed your butt would be rubbed raw after only one half of a football game. And in doing so, decided he could not look any farther ahead in his life than the next morning. But he had the rest of the day to think about things. And what he was thinking about were ways for a killer to escape from this place. There were exit doors all over Mansfield, front, rear, left, and right sides. The place was built long enough ago that people did not walk in with AK-47s and open fire, and thus the original builders had never considered that possibility.
But over the years, as the number of school shootings multiplied, many of the doors had been locked down, or could only be opened from the inside.
Visitors were now supposed to go to the front entrance and check in at the office. There had been talk of putting in metal detectors, but the cost was prohibitive for a nearly bankrupt school system. The school did have an automatic alert mechanism that would be sent out to folks' emails in the event of an emergency. Presumably, that had been deployed today in what was by far the worst emergency the city had ever suffered. Outside the ring of police vehicles and media trucks stood the families. When he had passed them earlier, Decker saw as much pain in those faces as he was ever likely to see in another human being. Molly would have gone to Mansfield when she entered the ninth grade. He could have been one of the parents standing out there, feet stamping lightly on the ground, hands in pockets, faces looking at shoes, a few murmurs between grieving folks. It was all horrible, and Decker felt his gut clench. He reached into his pocket and pulled out his wallet. Inside was a fading photo of his daughter on her ninth birthday. As it turned out, the last one she would ever celebrate. He traced the line of her impish smile, and then the curls of her hair. Her eyes were her mother's, hazel and sprightly. He remembered, of course, exactly when the picture was taken and precisely what he was doing when the camera had flashed.
It had been early summer, so he'd been barbecuing in the backyard, grilling two of his daughter's favorite foods, ribs from Kansas City and water-soaked corn on the cob still in their husks.
He looked back at the school and wondered again how the person had done it. First, gotten into the school with weaponry. Second, committed the murders. Third, managed the exit. That was the crux of the thing, really. Point number three, the exit. With all those people around, many of them still alive, how did you get away with no one seeing you?
Dollar for your thoughts?
He looked down on the ground near the crushed gravel path that ran around the football field, which itself was enclosed by a waist-high chain-link fence. Mary Lancaster was staring up at him, a cigarette perched in her right hand, while the left one rode on her hip, trembling away. She slowly made her way up the steps and sat next to him. She had looked pale and uncomfortable this morning. Now she looked crushed and even disoriented. It was amazing what life could do to you in less than a day. She puffed on her smoke, said nothing, but gazed out onto the empty field. "Shitty time," noted Decker quietly. She nodded but didn't answer. "What's the situation?" he asked.
"You want to come and see for yourself?"
He turned to stare at her. Before he could speak, she said,
"I heard what you did with Leopold."
"I never mentioned you coming to tell me."
"If it was me, I probably would have just shot him."
He knew that Lancaster had one child, Sandy, who had Down syndrome. Her husband Earl was in construction, which meant right now he was probably not working very much. They subsisted mostly on Lancaster's salary, which wasn't that large, but did come with good health benefits at least.
"You don't think he's good for it, do you?"
"I'd have to know a lot more."
"He'll get arraigned in the morning. With the confession, we can hold him. They're asking for no bail because he has no known address, no ties to the community, and thus is a decent flight risk. They'll set it for trial once he lawyers up."
"PD?" asked Decker, referring to a public defender.
"Looks that way. So, the Mansfield crime scene you want to see?"
"I can't go in there, Mary. You know that."
"You can if Max says it's okay. As an official consultant to the Burlington Police Department, a paid consultant. You won't get rich off it, but it's probably more than your PI gig is paying you."
"He really said it was okay?" She held out her phone.
"Want to read the email yourself? Or let me do it for you?"
She turned the screen back to her and read.
"Get Decker on Mansfield. See what he sees. We need help in him sitting on his fat ass feeling sorry for himself or obsessing over Leopold or playing private dick for lowlifes is not a good use of his time.
I see he's been following my recent career.
I guess so.
She rose, puffed her smoke nearly all the way down, and then flicked the butt away. Decker watched as it dropped down to the crushed gravel, flamed for a sec, and then went out. Like all those dead in the school, thought Decker as he rose, and followed his old partner down the steps. Chapter 12. School should never be this quiet. That was Decker's first thought as he walked down the hall next to Lancaster. His second thought was that this was the grimmest place he would ever visit. He passed pictures on the wall of long-ago principals of Mansfield, including the man who had headed up the school when he was there. He glanced at rooms where he had sat in class, sometimes listening, sometimes taking notes, and sometimes sleeping while pretending to listen and take notes. He forgot about the past when he saw the leg right at the juncture of two halls. It was a bare calf, which told Decker the body probably would be female. As they made the turn, his deduction was confirmed. She was sprawled on the linoleum that looked old enough to have been there when Decker had trod these halls. Photos and measurements had already been taken, and forensics gathered, or nearly so, Lancaster had told him. The girl seemed posed, one hand out like she had been waving to a friend when someone had violently stolen the remainder of her life.
"Debbie Watson,"
said Lancaster, as Decker stared down at the girl.
"Senior, just turned 18. Her parents have been notified."
Decker looked around. He had been working crime scenes for 20 years as a beat cop and then a detective.
He should feel perfectly natural here, looking for things he had looked for 1,000 times before. But he did not feel natural. He felt like an outsider. He felt like all the air in the school was being sucked away from him.
He fought hard against this inner turmoil and said, "But they haven't seen her." She shook her head.
"You know the drill. Crime scene. No one gets in, including parents. Besides, why would they want to see her like this?"
Decker had put on plastic booties and gloves Lancaster had given him. He knelt down next to Debbie Watson. As he did so, his head started to spin. He cleared his throat and focused on her body. She had taken what looked to be a round of buckshot full in the face. The result was she no longer had a face. He glanced at the wall behind her. It was splattered with bits of her. Books lay beside her. A notebook was soaked in blood. He looked down at a piece of paper that apparently had fallen out of a book. If these were the girl's doodles, she had been a good artist, thought Decker. "You have the order of shootings yet?" he asked.
"From everything so far, it seems she might have been the first one killed."
"Shooter's entry?"
"This way."
Lancaster led him a short distance away to what he recognized as the rear of the school. She pointed at the rack of doors.
"They're kept locked during the school day."
She pointed at a camera attached to the upper corner of a wall.
"That camera gave us a nice view of the ingress."
"Description?"
"I've got the image loaded on my laptop in the command center we set up in the library. But it was a big guy in full camouflage gear, face completely obstructed by a mask and a face shield."
"Belts and suspenders. Methodical." Lancaster continued.
"We believe he walked in this way, turned the corner, encountered Debbie Watson, and shot her."
"Wouldn't there have been other people in the halls?"
"At that time of morning, everyone was in their classes."
"So why wasn't Debbie?"
"She was going to the nurse's office. She had an upset stomach. That's according to the teacher who gave her permission to leave class."
Decker looked around again. Everyone was in class. So either the shooter was lucky, or he knew the routine of the school.
That thought struck me, too.
"And after Debbie went down?"
"He went to the gym, killed Joe Kramer, the teacher there, reversed course, passed Debbie's body, and headed toward the front of the school. By then, the shots had alerted everyone, but people were more or less trapped in their classrooms. He shot one more student dead in a classroom. He went into a second classroom and opened fire. One more dead and one wounded, a teacher.
Andy Jackson, English? I heard it on the news.
Yes. Then he walked to the opposite corridor and entered another classroom. Another dead. Another classroom on the same corridor, a sixth person shot dead. He headed to the school office where he shot and killed the assistant principal. He then shot and killed one more student in another classroom. All told, we have 8 dead. And Jackson's in critical condition, so the death count could go up by 1.
So 6 students and 2 adults?
Yes, and 1 critically wounded.
You said the shooter was dressed in camis, mask, and face shield?
Right.
What else? Type of footwear?
The video shot is from the waist up. No one we interviewed noted his footwear. He was wearing gloves. Weapons were a shotgun and handgun. Ballistics guys are still searching and spreadsheeting all of it. A lot of the ordnance is still in the victims. When he used the handgun, he fired multiple rounds into his victims.
To make sure they were dead, said Decker. Don't really have that concern with a shotgun.
No, you don't.
So hood plus a face shield. She nodded. Concealment was important for him. He might have been afraid he would be recognized. You said big guy. How big? She pulled her notebook.
Our video shot framed him with a poster hanging on the wall. We did some measurements. We're looking at a guy at least 6'2", with very broad shoulders. Like yours. Strong. Definitely male. Over 200 pounds.
So he walks all over the school, and we only get 1 video shot of him?
Maybe he knew where the cameras were and avoided them. Maybe he's been here before doing some recon for this massacre.
But in one instance, he didn't avoid the camera, rejoined Decker.
Why do you think? Inconsistency? Mistake?
Too early to tell. But if it was deliberate, we need to find out why. Lancaster wrote down some notes. You said he entered classrooms. She nodded. But he only killed 1 person in each before heading on.
That's right. Except he wounded the teacher in 1 of them.
These people have anything in common?
You think he might have been specifically targeting folks?
Can't rule it out yet.
He'd have to know what classrooms they'd be in at that time of the morning.
And he might have found out somehow.
I'll check into that. But it strikes me as doubtful, with all the chaos going on, that the guy would be able to run down a tally sheet of targets.
Maybe it was chaotic for everybody else, but not him. He had the guns.
But still, Amos.
She said doubtfully. And the exit? He asked, ignoring her last comment.
We haven't nailed that down yet.
He studied her. By the time the guy was finished shooting, how much time had passed?
The prelim time frame we pieced together is 10 minutes, maybe a bit more.
Decker glanced out a window. The front of the school was set far back from the road, within its own grounds. Across the street were residential properties. Nobody over there heard anything? Shots? Screams?
Still canvassing. He might have used a suppressor.
Not on a shotgun, he didn't. But my point is, how does a guy in camis, hood, and face shield, with at least 2 different weapons, and 1 of them a long barrel, walk out of here and nobody eyeball him? For that matter, how did he walk in and no one see him? The air was starting to feel close again. Sweat sprouted on his forehead. He put a gloved hand out to the wall. If Lancaster noticed his distress, she said nothing.
The video shows him entering on the rear side. There's really nothing back there except the old army base. He might have slipped in unseen. Maybe he hid in the dumpster back there and popped out.
Decker rubbed at his belly.
You okay, Amos?
My diet is for shit. Did you check the dumpster?
We checked everything and found nothing. We even checked the fence around the base. Nothing had been disturbed. And it's so overgrown that there probably would have been some indication of someone having come that way.
So he shot his way from the rear of the school to the front. Presumably, he left that way. How did no one see him then? There are houses across the street, and cars going up and down the road.
Well, the homes directly across the street are empty because of foreclosures, and it's a working-class neighborhood. There might not have been many people at the other homes at that time of the morning, and the school is set far enough back that the sounds might not have carried.
But presumably you had traffic along the street and kids and teachers at the windows, probably screaming their heads off. Cell phones hitting 911, cruisers rolling. I was at Precinct 2 when the guys started pouring out of the place. What is the time to the school from there by car? 15 minutes?
About that, yeah.
And even if nobody on the outside saw him leave, there had to be eyeballs at the school windows, kids using phones as cameras. From what I remember, there's not an exit in this building that's not visible from some classroom window.
And you knew this because you, what, snuck out a lot?
All the time.
Well, you got me there. I went to high school in the next county. This is your turf, not mine.
And that still doesn't cover his ingress. How did he walk in here and no one see him? Even if he was in the rear. There are windows overlooking it.
Yeah, but the second and third floors are unused.
But the first floor has windows looking out over the rear of the school. Lancaster could only shake her head. Has the school been searched?
It's being searched right now.
And the teachers, admin, and students?
Evacuated to safety.
To safety? Said Decker, ignoring now the pains in his head and belly.
We weren't sure whether the shooter was still here, Amos. The first priority on something like this is to get the innocent to a safe place and secure the area.
Well, to state the obvious, if no one saw him leave, how do you know you also didn't evacuate the shooter to a safe place?
No one was allowed to leave the area until we got descriptions of the shooter. The women were obviously above suspicion. All witnesses said it was a man. And there's not one guy in the building who fit his description.
Not even the students? They're growing kids pretty big these days.
All the male students who were of that size had alibis. Most of them are on the football team and are well known. They were all in their classrooms with 30 other kids. They couldn't have been the shooter. There were 4 male students who were out of class for various reasons. Not one of them is taller than 5'9 and weighs more than 150. All witnesses said the shooter was easily 200-plus pounds in addition to the height, and jacked, like an athlete.
How about guys who were absent from school that day?
Still checking on that. It might turn up something. But my gut tells me this is a stranger.
And none of the male teachers is that size?
The gym teacher was, but he's dead. So was the assistant principal. He's dead, too. Everybody else was under 6 feet and no more than 170, and not one of them is what you would call broad-shouldered. The only living teacher approaching the requisite weight was the chemistry guy, and he's 5'7 and a heart attack waiting to happen.
So where did the guy go? Did he drive up here? Lancaster shook her head.
Don't think so. No one saw any vehicles come or leave at the requisite times.
According to you, no one saw anyone come or go at those times, Mary.
It's problematic, I know. Look, if the guy is hiding in the building still, we'll get him. The place is surrounded by cops. Nobody is getting out of here.
You said a search is being conducted.
We've been going through the school 1 inch at a time. As soon as we got the place emptied out, nobody could have gotten out unseen, Amos.
Then you're walking right into a dead-end maze. She cocked her head and chewed her gum.
Come again?
If the place turns up empty and nobody saw the guy leave, then the shooter has to be someone who was in the school, a teacher or a student or an admin. All custodial folks accounted for? She nodded.
They're older and all have big guts, but I see your point.
Can I see the video footage of the guy? He followed her to the library. After they passed through the double wooden doors, Decker could see that the library had become the opposite of a quiet sanctum. The FBI had their corner, the state police their spot, and Lancaster and her crew were relegated to the far back left slice of the place.
Lancaster started walking to where her colleagues had set up shop, but Decker just stood there at the entrance to the library.
He had been away from this world for a while now, but it suddenly felt like forever. He did not like crowds. He did not care to walk in here and join this large group of investigators, even if they all had the same goal. Part of him wanted to slink back to the residence inn, close his door, shut his eyes, and let his cast of colors envelop him. And what good would he be anyway?
He couldn't find his family's killers. How would he have a shot to find this one? He eyed the door. He could still escape.
Amos! He looked over and watched in silence as Captain Miller headed his way. He had on his police uniform this evening. He held out a hand, which Decker shook unwillingly.
Thank you for helping us, Amos, said Miller. We can use it.
Decker eyed the manpower in the library. Looks like you have all the help you need.
He tried to pull his hand away, but Miller kept hold of it, his gaze locked on his former detective.
Looks can be deceiving, and I want you involved. You see things. I mean, you see things, Amos. And we have to catch this guy. We have to make this right. We have to give closure. He continued to keep his gaze directly on Decker's face until the latter looked back at him. Amos, we need closure. You understand that? I know you do.
I do, said Decker.
I understand it, if only because I never got it. Miller let his hand go. Why don't you go over and join your partner? Good to see you two together again. Decker said nothing. He just turned and walked over to where Lancaster was waiting for him. His opportunity for escape was now gone. And more than a part of him believed that Miller knew exactly what he was thinking when he'd been standing over by the door. And the police captain had decisively cut off his retreat. Decker settled his large bulk next to Lancaster at a table in the middle of the local cop's command center. Laptops were set up across the length of the table. Multi-port outlets littered the floor, connected to the extension cords, and computers, printers, and scanners were plugged into them. People moved around with files, papers, electronic tablets, all bearing an air of quiet desperation, Decker noted. He also knew that many of the cops had kids in the school. Not that they needed any extra incentive to nail the shooter. After Miller had called out his name, several suits and a couple of uniforms had recognized Decker and given him nods or grim looks, but none had spoken to him. He had not left the department under the best of circumstances, yet he doubted anyone really held it against him. But he was here now, and so he might as well get to work. He looked at Lancaster. The video? Lancaster hit the requisite keys, and a few seconds later, Decker was staring at the grainy footage.
There's the son of a bitch,
said Lancaster. He glanced at the timestamp. 8:41. When did classes start?
8:30 sharp. Everyone needs to be in their class by then.
You said he came in through the rear door. That's where this image is from, right?
Yes.
Are the exit doors kept locked?
They're supposed to be, but they're also not hard to jimmy open.
Did you find signs of forced entry?
Those doors haven't been replaced since the 70s, Amos. They're beat to hell. It was really impossible to tell if they'd been forced or not.
She hit some more keys and zoomed in on the corridor.
Now, we've identified this as the hall bleeding off.
She faltered.
Sorry. Poor choice of words. As the hall coming off the ingress, we've already identified. He would have made his turn, and that's where he would have encountered Debbie Watson, say maybe a minute later.
So first shot at 8:42 or thereabouts, allowing 1 minute from the video stamp and him encountering Watson.
Pretty much. And shotgun blasts, folks remember. In fact, a bunch of people looked at the time when they heard it. So 8:42 is a good number for the first shot.
Okay. Decker thought about what his next question should be. It should have come automatically, but it didn't. He was definitely rusty. He looked around at all the seasoned investigators toiling away. He used to be one of them. The fact was, he had checked out of his professional life as soon as he found his family dead. Actually, he might be, he had to admit, more of a hindrance here than a help.
He looked down at Lancaster, who was staring up at him, a sympathetic expression on her face.
It's like riding a bike, Amos,
she said, apparently reading the self-doubt on his face. Maybe not, Mary. I guess I'll find out. But if I can't carry my weight, I shouldn't be here. She looked back at the screen.
Okay, The camera doesn't have audio, so you can't hear it. And there was no camera on the next hall.
Why not?
Why else? No money in the budget. We're lucky to have any functioning cameras at all.
He thought for a moment. But they keep them up as a deterrent?
Right, because people didn't know they weren't operational.
But our guy was able to avoid all of them except this one.
It really didn't matter whether he did or not. He was completely covered, Amos. No way to recognize any feature.
Decker slowly nodded, feeling once more slow and reactive in his mental process. He looked back at the image on the screen, hood and face shield, and the camera shot was reflecting off the glare from the shield. He edged closer to the screen, like a scent hound ferreting prey. There's no direct hit even on his hooded face. He knew where the camera was and avoided it, even though he's covered.
You think that's important?
At this point in the investigation, there isn't anything that's not important. Lancaster nodded.
I think that was the second rule you ever taught me.
The first being to suspect everybody, Decker added absently, his gaze still squarely on the shooter. She said nothing to this, and he finally looked at her.
Like riding a bike, Amos. You were the best I've ever seen. I think you still can be.
He looked away, not really feeling better from her praise, because his altered mind didn't respond to that anymore either. Can you run the feed all the way until he turns the corner? Lancaster did so, and then, at Decker's request, did it three more times. He finally sat back, lost in thought, his gaze still on the screen, though. She stared over at him.
You see anything that hits you?
I see lots of things that hit me, but none more than a guy dressed like that, carrying weapons, who can apparently vanish into thin air.
I don't believe in ghosts or magic.
I don't either, Mary. But I do know one thing.
What's that?
That this guy is not going to get away. She kept her gaze on him, her expression becoming concerned.
You sure you're not talking about Leopold?
He shrugged, his eyes seeming to stare at somewhere a million miles from here. In a way, they're all fucking Leopolds.
Chapter 13. With Captain Miller's blessing, Lancaster had arranged temporary credentials and an access badge for Decker. He had worked enough crime scenes to watch where he walked and not disturb or corrupt potential evidence. He looked over reports, studied the video some more, chatted briefly with department folks he knew, nodded to some he didn't. While he was a long way from feeling comfortable working a crime scene again, he was starting to feel certain things coming back to him. His chief strength had always been observation. Looking around and seeing things, but not the way most people did. He had built convictions from small details that most overlooked, including, most significantly, the ones who had committed the crimes. And he had observed a lot here so far, and not all of it connected to the shootings. Principally, he noted that the FBI was playing the usual peacock game, strutting around and overwhelming everyone with their resources. But then again, he knew the police wouldn't mind the help. The goal was the same. Get the guy who did this. He fell back into the routine that he had employed in countless other investigations. He walked and observed and asked questions and read more reports. His travels took him around the entire perimeter of the school several times. He looked at it from every possible vantage point.
Then he went back inside the school and looked out of every window in the place. It was the darkest moments before dawn broke. He had been here for hours.
It felt like 10 minutes, because he really hadn't come up with anything. But that was okay. Miracles and epiphanies rarely happened in the middle of criminal investigations. If you wanted something like that, you needed to turn on the TV. Results in the real world came from slow, dogged work, compiling facts and building conclusions and deductions based on those facts. And a little luck never hurt either. A few minutes before dawn broke, the transports were called up to start taking the bodies to the morgue. There was a loading dock in the rear of the school.
The police had shielded it from view with a tarp and steel support poles.
The vehicles drove one by one through a gap in this wall. Behind the tarp, Decker knew the bodies were coming out, housed in black, sturdy bags. The bodies had names, but also numbers. They weren't human beings anymore. They were pieces in a criminal investigation. Debbie Watson would be Vic 1. Her body had been the starting point in numbering everybody else who had fallen. Joe Kramer, the gym teacher, had been labeled Vic 2, and on the numbering went, down the list of dead.
Decker leaned against the outside wall of the school near the loading dock and studied the blue tarp. And then he closed his eyes, because he equated the color blue with the slaughter of his family. He didn't need to see color in the outside world. He had enough of it going on inside his head.
Get back to basics, Amos. Slow and easy. You know how to do this. This was all you did for so many years. Mary is right. You can do this. Motive. It always began with that. Because motive was just another way of saying, why would you do something like this? Greed, jealousy, kicks, personal vendetta, perceived slight, insanity. The last was always tough to decipher, because how did you read a mind that was deranged? But this guy had method. This guy had some inside knowledge of the school. This guy had taken great care not to allow even a piece of his skin to be observed. They didn't even know if he was black or white. Although most mass murderers were white and male, and with his shooter's size and shape,
he was most definitely a male.
The face shield was an unusual step. It was not for defense. It couldn't have stopped a bullet. It was for concealment. He watched as the last of the transport vehicles pulled away, rack lights on, but no sirens engaged. The dead were in no hurry. Each body would be cut up as the medical examiners looked for clues. But the best they could hope for here would be ballistics. What type of bullet had killed them? He doubted the shooter had laid a finger on any of his victims. If he didn't touch, you didn't leave any usable trace behind. With the bullets, they could at least one day match them to the guns that had been used. And if the guns had an owner, the chain of title to this horrific event possibly could be traced. He walked back to the library, where Lancaster was sitting and going over case notes. She looked up as he approached.
I'm surprised you're still here,
she said, stifling a yawn. I have nowhere else I have to be, said Decker. He sat next to her.
Did you do your normal walk around?
He nodded. But I didn't really see anything.
You will, Amos. Give it time.
Earl with Sandy? She nodded.
He's used to it. Been a lot of long nights lately.
She glanced around the room.
But nothing like this.
Decker nodded slowly. Again, his chit-chat component was at an end. Do you have completed witness statements yet?
I've been putting some of them on the computer. There's not much there, but I haven't talked to the wounded teacher yet. Odds are he won't make it. And if he dies, that'll make 9 Vics total.
Andy Jackson. How was he shot?
Students in the class said he tried to stop the shooter.
How? Asked Decker.
Ran at him, put himself between the shooter and the students.
Before or after he shot one of them?
After.
Decker settled back and thought about this as Lancaster watched him.
Pretty brave of the guy.
Decker didn't respond to the statement. I need to see the witness statements. His tone was now brisk, confident. Lancaster noted this and allowed a tiny smile to escape her lips as she pulled them out for him.
He went through each page of the statements. When he was done, he flipped back to page 2 and then over to page 10 of the witness statements, before putting aside the notebook.
See anything?
Asked Lancaster, who had been watching him off and on as she worked away. He rose. I'll be back.
Decker.
But for a large man carrying a lot of extra weight, he could move faster than one would have expected. Perhaps a little of the freewheeling football player was left inside him. He closed the library door behind him and set off down the hall. Lancaster hadn't followed him. Being his partner for 10 years, she was well used to his doing this. Some bee would get in his bonnet, and off he would go without a word to her or anyone else. She went back to her work. Decker had gone 10 paces when he stopped and glanced out a window overlooking the front parking area. It was starting to rain, he could see. He could also see a large group of candles seemingly floating in midair. They weren't candles, of course. The rain would have doused them. They were cell phone lights. It was a vigil group out front. It seemed like the whole town of Burlington was out there. Maybe it was. And after what had happened here, maybe it should be. There had been a vigil outside his house the night after the murders. They had been real candles then, plus a pile of flowers, signs, and stuffed animals. It had been meant as signs of support, love, solidarity, caring. That was all good. But the sight of that pile had left him sickened and disoriented, and mad with something even beyond grief. He turned away from the window and kept walking as the rain started to hammer down on the school's roof. He could imagine the cell phones winking off as the group hastily put them away. Or maybe they would keep them out in the rain. Let them die, too, as a sign of solidarity to those who had been lost inside this place. Decker passed a detective he knew in the hall. He was talking to someone in a suit, whom Decker had seen before in the library. The man was FBI. The detective nodded at Decker. "Here you're consulting on the case, Amos. Good to see you." Decker nodded hesitantly as he glanced at the FBI agent. The man was giving Decker the once-over, and the appraisal, Decker could tell from the man's expression, did not turn out favorably. "Yeah," was all Decker could manage in a gruff voice, before he hurried on. But then he put aside the awkward encounter, which his mind allowed him to do quite easily. He could compartmentalize at an astonishing level. It came from not giving a shit. And something did not make sense. That was the reason for his abrupt departure from the library. Page 2 of the witness statements. Melissa Dalton, age 17 and a junior, had been putting books away in her locker. The time had been early, 7:28, more than an hour before school officially began. She was here to take a makeup test she had missed due to an illness. Dalton had known the exact time because she had glanced at the clock on the wall above her locker, afraid that she would be late. She had perfect attendance throughout high school, with not even a tardy to mar her record. This was important to her, since her parents had said 4 years of such perfection would merit a hand-me-down car all her own when Dalton graduated. So 7:28. That's when Melissa Dalton had heard something, and she had told Lancaster when Mary interviewed her. She had heard something 1 hour and 2 minutes before the bell would ring. Maybe 12 minutes after the bell rang, or at approximately 8:42, Debbie Watson would lose her face and her life when the shooter turned the corner and raised his shotgun. All because she had an upset stomach. But how could Melissa Dalton have heard what she did? Small observations can lead to large breakthroughs. He kept going. Chapter 14. Decker stopped and looked around. The gym was to the far left on the last hall on the first floor. Then classrooms. Then the rear entrance. On the other side of the main corridor were more classrooms, the custodial space, and the rear loading dock off that. The main corridor ran front to back, splitting the first floor exactly in half, with 3 corridors running off to the left and right, like straight branches off a tree trunk. Since only the middle hallway had exits on either end, that meant there were 4 sets of entry and exit doors, situated at all 4 points of the compass. He headed to the rear entrance and peered up at the camera. Then he walked to different spots along the rear doorway and checked the camera each time he did so. Interesting. He reversed course and walked down the main hall until he neared the front entrance. Then he veered to the left, down the hall where the cafeteria was located, on his left, and the library, on the right. This was where Melissa Dalton's locker was located, directly across from the cafeteria. He looked at the locker. Just behind it was the library where Lancaster was toiling away. On the opposite side, next to the sprinkling of classrooms, was the large cafeteria. Decker recalled from his school days that there was a storage and prep area at the end of the cafeteria with an exterior door leading to a small concrete porch area where shipments of food would be stacked. So that actually made six doors. Four main ones off the halls, one off the rear loading dock, and one here off the cafeteria. At 7:28, Melissa Dalton had heard a door open and close. It was not an interior classroom door, because there had been a whooshing sound associated with it, she had said, like a vacuum closing. Like a vacuum closing. Those had been Dalton's words. Lancaster had noted in the statement that Dalton had told her she loved science and the class had just gone over vacuums, which was no doubt why that term was fresh in her mind. Lancaster had put multiple question marks next to this statement, plus a large asterisk. She was no doubt planning to check that out later. Decker couldn't blame her for marking the statement, so it didn't seem to make sense. So that was page 2 of the statements.
On page 10 of the witness statements was a little nugget. It was the counterpart information that had really caused Decker to come here.
The cafeteria workers came in at 8:45 sharp, not before, not after. That had been verified from multiple sources as being the case yesterday as well.
All the cafeteria workers were female. There was simply not a 6'2", 200-plus-pound, broad-shouldered male among them.
And since the shooting had started at 8:42, none of the cafeteria workers had actually made it into the school. Four of them were getting out of their cars in the parking lot, and another was waiting to turn into the lot when all hell had broken loose. Decker stepped into the cafeteria and looked around. His hand instinctively went to the butt of his pistol, which was wedged in his waistband and hidden under his jacket. He nudged the safety off with his thumb. He already had a round chambered. The lights were off in here. Decker found the switches and flicked them on using his elbow. He walked across the main space, passing tables with chairs stacked neatly on top of them. At the end of the room were the serving counters, all stainless steel and glass. The serving tubs were all empty. Everything was clean, dishes stacked neatly, all ready to go, except for the absence of any hungry students and folks ready to serve them. His gaze was roaming to the floor as he stepped, but there wasn't a discernible footprint there. Decker stepped through the opening into the rear space. There were portable shelving units here used to carry food from this area to the serving area. They were parked against the walls. There were mops and buckets and other cleaning tools. That was of no interest to Decker. What was of interest to him was the built-in freezer located at the far end of the storage room. A whooshing sound, a vacuum, a freezer door closing or opening. He pulled out his pistol. He wasn't exactly expecting to find the shooter in full camis inside the freezer. They had to have searched back here and, of course, open the freezer. But he had seen enough weird shit in his life not to discount the possibility. And to take anything for granted at this point could mean he, too, might leave the school in a body bag in the back of a silent transport. He aimed his pistol at the door, stepped to the side, gripped the handle with his coat sleeve, jerked it upward, and tugged it hard. The door opened, cleanly. With a whoosh, he noted, as the air seal was broken. He imagined in the early morning hours, it would have echoed right out into the empty silent hall and into Melissa Dalton's ears. Well, this had been his little experiment, and it seemed to corroborate what the girl had said. Decker backed away and took up position behind a work table. He edged around it until he could see fully into the freezer. It was empty, except for food. But had it been empty at 7:28, the morning of the rampage? Decker stepped inside the freezer and looked around. He noted that the door had a safety mechanism that allowed anyone inside to open it. That way, one couldn't become trapped inside and freeze to death. Then he noticed it. Or felt it, rather. Freezers were supposed to be really cold, set at zero, in fact. This freezer was merely cold, maybe not as cold as even the temperature outside. He checked the temperature gauge. No wonder. It read 45. He opened up some of the containers in the freezer and saw what he expected to see. The meat and other perishables had defrosted and were beginning to go bad. They would have to throw them out. So the guy had upped the temperature in the freezer and used it as his hiding place. And Melissa Dalton had heard exactly what she thought she had. A whooshing sound as the guy emerged at 7:28. But why hide in the freezer? And how did he get in the school to begin with? Presumably, the freezer was used during the day, so he had to have come in after hours. And he had to have come in the night before the shooting. Otherwise, he would have been discovered when the freezer door was opened by the kitchen staff when they began their duties. Next question. What would coming in here gain him? And the mother of all questions. How could he have walked from the cafeteria at the front of the school all the way to the back to commence his rampage and no one see him? It was like he'd teleported in from a spaceship. Fresh questions started coming in waves to Decker as the potential suspect pool morphed. What about visitors, parents, outside service people? Lancaster hadn't mentioned anyone like that. But he presumed that anyone in the school at the time would have been held for questioning. That was the most basic rule of a criminal investigation. No one got to simply walk away. But there had been a gap between the shootings and the police shutting down ingress and egress. The shooter had to have made his escape then. But how had he done it without being seen? Decker came out of the freezer and closed it behind him. He walked a few paces and looked up. The freezer did not have a hiding place. But here was something. He grabbed one of the chairs and planted it in the middle of the room. He heaved himself up onto the chair. With his height, he bumped his head against the tile ceiling. A drop-down ceiling, what people also called a floating ceiling, since the light tiles rode on metal racks that hung down about 2 feet from the actual permanent ceiling. It had been a retrofit, he knew, done long after the school was originally built. No one was installing drop ceilings in the 1940s. He lifted one of the ceiling tiles and poked his head through. Using his phone as a flashlight, he shone it around the darkened interior of the space. There was a lot of crap up here, including electrical lines, pipes for the sprinkler system, and HVAC ductwork. There was no way a guy that big could fit up here. And even if he had managed it, the light supports wouldn't have held his weight. He repositioned the chair 3 more times until he found something. Not up top, on the floor. A bit of ceiling tile dust. He looked at the spots that he had already examined. There was a bit of such dust now under each, because he had lifted the tiles there and dislodged the grainy material. But he hadn't touched the tiles at this spot. He took pictures of everything from different angles. Then he positioned his chair and hoisted himself up once more. He used his hand, covered with the sleeve of his jacket so as not to smear or add to any fingerprints already there, to push the tile gently up. He poked his head through and looked around. The space was empty here. No pipes or electric lines or ductwork. What was here was space to hide something, like Kami gear, and perhaps even weapons. He looked over every inch of space and then hit pay dirt. Snagged on a metal support was a thread. He shone his light on it. It looked beige. At another support point, there was a smudge in the dust, and in a third spot might just be oil residue from maybe a shotgun wedged there. He touched nothing, climbed down, and texted Lancaster. The forensics team would have to come down here and tear this place apart. While he was waiting for them, he walked to the exterior door opening onto the small loading dock. Shit. It had looked locked, but when he had leaned his bulk against the door, it had fallen open, prompting his expletive. He stepped out onto the small loading dock. It was surrounded by a 6-foot-tall wooden fence. With his height, he could see over.
Some garbage cans were located here, as well as a small dumpster,
and wooden crates were stacked in one corner. Decker nudged open the fence gate and peered out. 2 parking spaces, both empty now. Off that, a short strip of cracked asphalt, and then a chain-link fence that led to a long row of 10-foot-tall bushes and other shrubbery that had grown up right next to the fence. He walked quickly over to the fence. At the spot opposite from the kitchen entrance, he pushed his way through the bushes. The chain-link fence here was split right down the middle. He shone his cell phone light over it. Rusted. It had been this way for a while. He continued through the bushes and came out on the other side. Here was a path that led down into the woods that had been next to the school since forever. Easy come, easy go. Chapter 15. Lancaster whittled down her gum while a tech team scoured the cafeteria and kitchen area. Outside, teams of police and FBI agents were following the trail that Decker had showed them. Decker leaned against one wall of the cafeteria, his hands in his pockets, and took in all that was going on. Lancaster walked over to him.
We had looked in the freezer before, but we didn't check the food or the temperature gauge. That was an oversight. I'm sure we would have noticed it later.
You were looking for a shooter. Clearing rooms, Decker said. Not worrying about spoiled hamburger. I didn't have to worry about that. I was just nosing around.
Right. After you took off from the library without a word. I called after you, you know. I could have come with you, Amos.
He noted her hurt look and then gazed around. It had not occurred to him at the time. She was still on the police force, so her and Decker finding this new line of investigation together would have helped her career. As it was, it had been Decker's discovery, which helped Lancaster not at all. I didn't...
Forget it,
she said abruptly.
You did the same thing when we officially worked together.
I did?
I guess it's just a quirk of yours. Although for a guy who has this great memory, I would have expected you to remember doing it, at least to me.
I'm a little out of sorts here, Mary. Her irritation seemed to lift.
No, I think you're getting your mojo back. I knew you would. That's the important thing.
It's not like you need me to solve this case. You have a lot of resources.
The thing is, Amos...
She looked down for a moment, chewing her gum. Then she gazed up at him and said,
Truth is, I miss working with you. I think we made a good team.
Decker nodded, but said nothing. As the moments went by, Lancaster evidently realized he was not going to comment on this admission. She said,
But what I don't get is, if he was in here, how did the video camera capture him at the rear entrance? It doesn't jibe.
Decker pushed off the wall. I'll show you. He led her to the rear of the school and pointed at the camera that had captured the image of the gunman. Check the angle. She stared up at the lens.
Okay.
Keeping to one side of the rear foyer, Decker circled around so that his back was to the rear door. Then he stepped to his left. This is the spot where the camera picks up an image. I could see it on the feed. That middle door behind me is the only one in the frame.
So the shooter could have done what you just did? Come in from the side and then gotten picked up by the camera.
Ann made it appear that he had come in the rear entrance when he really hadn't.
I wonder why the camera is positioned that way.
Well, it could have been moved. Decker went over to the camera, extended his arm, and touched it. I can reach it, but I'm tall. Yet someone short of using a stick or a broom or something like that could have repositioned it. Probably no one would notice. It's not like someone is monitoring this full time, right?
Damn, this thing keeps getting more and more complicated.
No. It's getting more and more premeditated, Mary.
You want to go outside and smoke with me?
He looked at her funny. I don't smoke.
I thought this might make you start.
I can be fat or I can smoke. I can't be both. They walked back to the cafeteria. When they reached it, Lancaster popped another stick of gum into her mouth and started chewing.
Captain Miller's calling you in? Paid dividends.
Decker looked at her. What dividends? She pointed at the room they were in.
This, Decker, Jesus, for a smart guy, you can be obtuse at times.
I found this, so what? Not really a clue to the shooter.
He was hiding in the freezer with the temp turned way up. It looks like he hid his weapons and maybe his cami gear in the ceiling. So he was already here, which is why no one saw him come in.
But have you found any other trace?
Oil mark on a ceiling tile support. Could be from a gun. The thread you found looks to be cami fiber. The FBI is verifying, so that's something.
He drew his hands from his pockets and placed his index finger a half inch from his thumb. This is how much I found. Nothing to cheer about.
Well, it's more than we had.
I saw the control panel. When does the security system get turned on here?
Normally 10 p.m., but there was an event that night, a school play that ran late, lots of people. So the system wasn't turned on until midnight so everyone could get out of the building.
And no activity on the alarm log? She shook her head.
None. First thing we did was check with the monitoring company. The log is clear.
So the shooter has to get in before midnight. Did this play involve refreshments in the cafeteria?
No. A friend of mine went because her kid was in it. She told me everyone left right after the play was over.
So he comes in during the gap before the alarm system was set and takes up his hidey hole.
Why put his guns in the ceiling then, Amos? Why not just have them in the freezer with him?
You're assuming he came in with them and then took up his hiding spot. What if he brought the weapons in at another time and hid them? Then the freezer wouldn't work. Someone would spot them. The ceiling would work just fine. If he did hide them up there. She shook her head stubbornly.
Why not do it all at once? It was pretty risky to get the guns in and hidden, and then sneak in again and hide in the freezer? Another risk that someone might have seen him.
Agreed. If that's the way it happened, then there must be an explanation for it. The guy strikes me as being methodical and thoughtful.
I can see that,
said Lancaster. Decker continued to ruminate, seemingly talking to himself. Guns and gear first, then the shooter. He might have come in for the school play along with everyone else, or appeared to do so. The auditorium is across the main hall from the cafeteria. Entering the main entrance, you turn left for the auditorium. Maybe this guy hung a right and went to the cafeteria. Or if folks came in the back entrance, too, from the parking lot out there, the right and left are reversed. He stays all night and starts his rampage the next morning. So you need to check if anyone saw someone they didn't recognize at the school last night. He paused. But there's the same old hitch.
What?
Asked Lancaster, as she popped another stick of gum in her mouth after wadding up the old one in a tissue and throwing it into the trash can. If your theory holds that Debbie Watson was the first Vic, she was on the hall next to the rear entrance. That would mean that if our guy was hiding in the freezer overnight, he would have had to walk down the hall between the cafeteria and the library, turn right down the main hall, past two more corridors on both sides, past classrooms and presumably people, to take out first Watson and then, at the other end of the hall, the gym teacher Kramer. Then he reverses his path and starts mowing folks down as he moves back to the front of the school. Decker looked at her skeptically.
That doesn't seem plausible.
Why not just start shooting on the front half of the school and work your way to the back? Which would mean Watson would be one of the last Vicks, not the first.
But the timestamp on the video?
That's the real hitch in all this. That tells us he did begin his shooting at the rear part of the school, and he wanted us to see him on that camera for some reason. Now that we know he might have been hiding in the cafeteria, the video image looks like misdirection. So that means we have one proven point, the video camera timestamp, and one almost proven point, the shooter was hiding in the cafeteria. If they're both true, neither makes sense as a whole. 1 + 1 does not equal 3.
You're starting to lose me, Amos.
You have the school interior laid out with your prelim shot register? She nodded. Let's take a look, because it might just be this guy did the reverse of what we think he did.
But if you're right about what you found, and he did go front to back to front, he would have made his escape out through the storage area off the cafeteria, and then through the path to the woods. That's the easiest egress. It would all fit.
Decker took a breath, let it out, and stared at the ceiling. And maybe that's exactly what the son of a bitch wants us to think.